Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Matt Rad. And if you're interested in building websites, selling them, making a full-time living from your online content websites, then this is the podcast for you. So what Matt does for a living, he has his own websites, but he also teaches his students how to replicate it and do what he has done. And we dive into a whole range of topics around content websites in terms of growing them, buying them, when you should sell versus keeping them for cash flow, how his teachings may or may not change with the change in, I guess, AI content through Google now. And we just go deep into the weeds of all these things around content websites regarding buying and selling. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Matt Rad. Welcome, Matt.
G'day, James. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for coming on. It's nice to have someone from the Southern Hemisphere on the podcast.
I was just about to say, you know, it's great to meet a fellow Kiwi just across the world. Not fellow, like you're almost an Australian, but I think you guys are a bit better at the rugby than us. But anyway.
but not the rugby league. The rugby league is the one that always escapes our grasp there within various things. Actually, it's funny enough, I was talking to you about the rugby before. I used to work in rugby league as well. So I worked in both codes.
And now here we are today talking about making money online with like, you know, content websites and stuff. It's cool how the world's changing, isn't it?
I know. Do you want to maybe provide a brief background about what you do, Matt, and some of your, I guess, your online, I guess, your business?
Yep. So my wife and I have been entrepreneurs for now nearly 30 years from basically the day we met. And we started buying and selling businesses. So back then, obviously, it was bricks and mortar businesses. And then for us, we're not an overnight success or anything like that. It took us many years. It's a hard slog because we got into manufacturing businesses and we just bought and sold. We got successful. We bought and sold lots of them. And then fast forward through to today, we moved online, which we're going to talk about in this interview, because we saw that it was a lot easier. And because when we got online, we were quite early online back in before the GFC, about 2008. So we're totally self-taught. So I think that set us up for what we love doing today, which is teaching beginners like how we used to be, because we struggled technically. We grew up on farms and stuff. We had no idea how computers even work. And we struggled a lot technically in the beginning part of our journey, but we realized it's a fantastic model to make money because it doesn't suck up lots of your capital. And so what we do today is we run the eBusiness Institute. We founded the eBusiness Institute to teach beginners who typically are a little bit older. They usually have kids, family, stuff like that. They're used to investing in, say, real estate, and they typically want to quit their job and work from home. And that's basically who we help these days. So we've got a lot of experience been doing this for 10 years. So We've got a lot of experience in teaching people to successfully transition from full-time jobs to full-time online income, and we've got a variety of strategies that we help them do that.
Nice, nice. I like that. All right, let's maybe dive into some of the website stuff then. I guess the first thing that came to my mind there was, what's your process for teaching someone, I guess, if they acquire an online business, how do they juggle their time between their full-time job and then working on the website? Are you looking at specific kinds of sites or businesses that are maybe less time intensive?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're very relevant to niche website builders, isn't it? This is why we love what you guys do. Content sites. We're all about content sites. That's how Liz and I made our money and made the big money online. And so that's all we teach. We don't do e-commerce because, mainly because of our background in buying and selling businesses, actually. So we used to buy and sell, like I said, manufacturing, but also wholesale import businesses. And they're complex. They're not the sort of businesses that you'd want to get into as a beginner. And like, we were doing that at the multi-million dollar level. So what we know is, when we got online, we vowed to each other, we're never touching an online or a business again that has physical inventory. It's just too complex. We don't want all our money tied up in a warehouse somewhere like we used to in the good old days. So for us personally, from day one, we've always done content sites, which is basically AdSense or affiliate sites, or we sell information products. And we've been doing that since, I think we started our first site in 2009. And so in answer to your question, as you know, James, those sorts of sites tend to be, I won't say they're fully passive or anything like that, but they're sites that we find also our clients who are working full-on jobs. Like, we've got lawyers, doctors, all sorts of people who work full-on hours. The good thing, if you're listening to this and you know what a content site is, you should know, basically, you can park it and then come back to it. You might just work on it once a month or once a week or whatever. So for most of our clients who are transitioning out of their careers, they find this, I guess you'd call it, you know, what's the modern term? Like, it's a side hustle. It's an evening side hustle, or on the weekends when they've got a bit of time from the kids. Normally for our guys, it's when the kids go to bed and then they can sit there. And we have a lot of partners on, like, you know, husband, wives and stuff. Or we also have, you know, father, sons, father, daughters, mothers and their daughters doing this together. So normally, that's a big advantage as well with these content sites. So each of them can learn how they work and then work on them, I guess you call it part-time, and then build them up over a period of a year or so.
Are you having your students buy content sites or create them from
Absolutely.
Scratch?
Absolutely. Yep. That's one of the key things that we teach here at the eBusiness Institute, because that's our background. That's how we always bought and sold bricks and mortar business, it's kind of in our blood. That's how we self-taught ourselves as entrepreneurs for both Liz and I. What we did, our journey, when we got online, we saw the online space actually back in 2005, and we were already starting to look at it. But back then, it was just so technical. We just put it aside. But Liz was always fascinated by it. And she said, when we have kids, I think that's what I want to do full time. I said, cool, let's do that. And so when our kids came along, Liz, we built our first websites by hand coding them. That was even before Dreamweaver was around back then. So Liz learned, she's the technical one. She's really good. She had to learn HTML and stuff, and we hand coded sites. But honestly, that was a hard slog back then, building a website. And Liz is quite I'm the calm one, and Liz is, and I'm long-term thinking, and Liz is just typical, she's the real go-getter, like, she's just so impatient. And I remember her one day just saying to you, like, we got pretty successful with this first site that she did. It was making about $5,000 a month. So back in 2008, that was pretty good money. That's net. And but she said, Matt, I was going to use an Aussie term there, James, like, starts with B and ends in ER. You know, she said, nah, stuff this. Why don't we just do what we've always done? Let's just start buying these things. It's heaps easier because we get instant cash flow. And that's where the journey started. And that was back before Flipper existed or anything like that. And we just went on to forums, and we actually bought, this sounds bizarre, one of our first great websites that we bought, you wouldn't do this these days, we found it on eBay because back then no one knew how to sell websites. So it was really bizarre. And that was a brilliant site. We ended up, that thing made us a ton of money over the years. And, you know, so that's what we teach here is if you need, like Liz, if you need that instant cash flow, as long as you know what you're doing, because we're very experienced at buying businesses, right? So for us, once we figured out the technical side of how a website works and goes together and everything, there was a no-brainer to just start buying them just like we used to with bricks and mortar businesses. Mm. And of course, online, all of a sudden for us, we're used to buying, you know, big business where you're going to the bank for loans and you got overdrafts and you're running lots of stock. With these things, it's just cash down and cash in your bank account straight away because there's such high cash flows, as you know, like 80% margins and stuff. And so we're like kids in a candy shop. We just went for it. We bought a portfolio and that's literally how we did it. So that's what we teach to this day. Now, things have changed a little bit. You wouldn't have as big a portfolio as what we had, but it worked really well for us.
So you bought a bunch of sites at once, did you? And grew a bunch of sites
over... we tried to, yes. So back, I wouldn't say at once, I'd say over a period of, you know, we got into it, we hit really big success with the first few sites that we bought. These are just kind of private deals that we did. Yeah. And then what we started doing was the actual strategy that we used, because Flipper and all those marketplaces didn't exist. We started buying websites by exactly how we used to do it with bricks and mortar businesses, which is door knocking, private approach. And we realized it was, even that was way more leveraged for us because we didn't have to go and physically door knock like we used to. We used to go around factories in the western suburbs of Sydney and talk to people and see if they want to sell their businesses. And it's a lot of work. And so what we did online, we could sit here in Australia. We now live in Queensland. You know, it's beautiful. You know, Jimmy Jams, and just email people all around the world. And literally, you know, and then you get on, back then we'd get on Skype. That doesn't exist now. But, and we'd just talk to people just like we used to with bricks and mortar. It's exactly the same strategy. And so we got to know, in answer to your question, what our strategy back then was, we got to know certain niches, because we very quickly got into SEO even before it was a big thing, and we decided to niche into certain niches online. All this weird and wonderful stuff, because once we got success with one website in a particular niche, then we just thought, all right, just we'll do what we've always... Yeah, we'll just do like the big... Because we used to work with private equity firms and high net worths and stuff, and what they all would always do, they might buy an electrical distribution business, right? And then what they'd say to me is, hey, Matt, we've got $50 million to spend. Can you go and find us three other electrical distribution businesses in Australia? We're going to buy them all up and roll them together in one package. So Liz and I just literally did that online. That was our strategy. So we would pick a niche, get success with one particular site in it, and then we'd go around and virtual door knock, I guess you call it, heaps of other sites in that niche and just see who would sell. And we would buy up, you know, we might have owned 5 or 6 websites in each vertical niche that we're in.
Oh, nice.
And because you think about it, it worked really well from an SEO. I was doing it mainly for an SEO and kind of an empire building type idea, just like our mentors did in bricks and mortar world. But also, Liz, again, being impatient, realized we can get way better deals with the affiliate managers if we own all the top 5 websites in that niche. And instead of getting, you know, 20% commissions, we're on one of them, we're on 45% commissions. And the affiliate manager actually said to us, guys, you are the only people, there's only one other company on the planet that gets that commission. And it's a very well-known publicly listed company. And he said it's because of the sites that you own. He goes, all right, I'll pay you that commission. And he said, you're just not allowed to tell anyone what you're on and all that sort of. But it shocked us that no one else was on that sort of a commission. And I think that was a real eye-opener for us. And that's also what we teach now. Like for anyone listening, if you own a content site, one of the key way, like it's just a walk in the park. If you've got a bit of success SEO-wise, like you're getting a lot of traffic to your site, 9 times out of 10, you can negotiate a far better affiliate rate, as long as it's not with Amazon and stuff like that, as long as it's with these private affiliate offers. And basically, that's, I think, really in a nutshell, that's our success. That's why we were so successful so early in the piece. And now, obviously, to us it was so easy. I think that's why we're so passionate about teaching it to beginners. We don't actually, you know, advanced, but if you're advanced, sorry, we can teach it to advanced. Obviously, you know, we've got clients that we've helped go to seven figures and stuff like that. That's not a problem. But really, I think our passion, it was such a buzz for us. I still remember, you know, when you start seeing those affiliate comms come into your bank account, when you're here in Australia, and all this stuff was in the US, you know, you literally wake up in the morning. It was like the dream thing that you hear about, like on podcasts like this. And like, man, we're talking large sums of money. And for me as a business owner, you got to remember, I've sold thousands of businesses and worked with lots of high net worths and stuff. And I know how cash flows work, right, in big multi-million dollar businesses. And to see this money come in and know that 90% of that I'm going to get to keep in my various companies, like, man, that is so exciting. So now I get to help people achieve the same thing. Except one big difference, if you're listening, you don't do the big portfolio thing these days unless you're going really big level. That's probably the one main change that we've, for Liz and I, over the last decade.
So what would you consider a big portfolio then? How many sites would that be?
Over 100.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So, these days I would recommend, like, James, for your, we know niche website builders really well, right? Because you guys provide, when you think about it, if you're listening, this is how we got introduced to niche website builders. We just realized these guys have got the perfect solution for our clients. And if you're listening, is in the content. Right. So I'm presuming if you're listening to this, you probably understand what content websites are and or you're thinking of getting into it. And when you think about it, I'm presuming for your normal listener on this podcast, my advice would be don't go too big in your portfolios, even though I'm a big proponent of owning a portfolio of websites, but particularly if you're trying to transition out of a job, if you're still working a job and you haven't yet quit or anything like that, then don't be doing what Matt and Liz did 15 years ago or whatever. What our advice generally is, have a goal. You're not going to achieve it straight away. Have a long-term, like a two-year vision and plan for this. I would go for 10 to 12 really high quality websites. And within that, it'll be the 80-20 rule. I'll put money on it. I've seen, you know, we've trained thousands of people. It always pans out this way. Even within our own portfolio, it's always an 80-20 rule. There'll be 20% of your websites that are the big winners, and the rest will either break, you know, not break even, but they'll kind of might make a couple hundred bucks, a couple of thousand bucks a month. And then you'll have small ones that you're constantly building up. And that's basically what we've seen work really well, James, that portfolio size of 10 to 12. These days, you could even go less. We've got some really successful students with very successful six-figure content websites, and some of them just focus on those. They might only own three websites, and that's it. And they've always got a couple on the go in the background, but they're, you know, they might be minor little things. So that's kind of what we've seen change over the last, since 2009 that we've been doing this.
So how are you juggling time between 10 to 12 sites? Do you have a specific strategy in place where you're kind of spending X amount of time on certain sites, or are you just mainly focusing on the sites making the money and the others are kind of in the background?
Mate, that's a very smart question. I can see you do this because that's what we do here as coaches. That's my constant balance. And I think that's probably the number one question that our clients that I'm personally coaching ask me. They get to this point where they've got the success and the knowledge. So we teach them the knowledge, then they get successful with it. And then at that point, it's all the coaching calls are always about that. How do we manage our time now? And at what point can I quit my job? And, you know, I've been an advisor to high net worths for 20 years or so. And that's something that I work out between me and the client. And it depends on their lifestyle and how many hours they have. But how do you manage those? Typically I find myself recommending, and what I'm observing across our whole community, is what you just said, James. I prefer to get them to focus. Liz calls it the binge theory, where you just focus on one website for maybe a couple of months, depending on how much time you have, and you really get it up and running, and then you loop back to the other ones. Because so what we do is we have this system, like they have in, you know, the military or in the medical field, which is triage. So we teach, have your A, B, and C sites. And don't always neglect your C sites. So A is obviously your number numero numero sites. You've got to put lots of effort into them. And also you're watching your Google Analytics very closely to see which are the winners when you're renovating a website. So we teach people to buy and renovate websites, just like we used to with bricks and mortar businesses. And when you see the winners, you want to step on the accelerator. So you triage them. They come to the top. We focus on those. And then you have B and C sites, which are, so the B sites are the next level down. So you still get your team working on those. And then you have your C sites, which stands for C-R-A-P. Like, let's face it, they're not the best. But what happens is, if you can keep those ticking along, they're the ones that you might test out new techies on or new writers on. They're kind of your test beds. But typically, over a course of years, they will also turn into B sites, hopefully. And if not, you just sell them off. So what it is then, it's a balance of your time, but it's a really, it's probably the number one challenge we have amongst our community and what we're helping people with these days, particularly since COVID and everything. I think society's changed. It's really interesting. It's not, when it was, you know, when we first started teaching this 10 years ago, people weren't as worried about time in inverted commas, but these days, oh man, people are just under the pump. And so I think what one of the things we do a lot of is time management techniques and also mindset around it and making people realize this is a journey. It's not a get rich thing. This is a journey, and you've got to ready yourself for that. If you want success in life, typically, you know, it's going to take 2 to 3 years. So let's just work backwards from a plan for that. And then, with your portfolio site. So, and the other thing that I will throw out, this is such an important question, right? To anyone listening, the biggest tip too that we also give then is not just time management and where you focus, like James was saying, maybe on like one key site, bring it up. But also at the same time, see, remember we're training beginners here, right? So what we're trying to do to get the real leverage is trying to encourage you to be building your team, your remote team. That's the main thing where we start to get leverage. Like even for Liz and I, all those years ago, we realized pretty quickly we need a team here to help us. So the big bottleneck now is mainly content. And that's where I think niche website builders step in so well. If you've got a bit more money, guys, free up your life. This is an investment, right? So every single dollar use, if you've got a good content site, it's like money in the bank. Content, seriously, that's, you get the right content on there, that is literally a virtual asset. It's like owning physical real estate, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's an investment well worthwhile. Now, that's a huge, so our biggest bottleneck in, as anyone listening to this, just like me and Liz, for all of us, if we own content sites, our number one bottleneck, it's not the tech. It's not the building of it. Once you've built it, it's done once, done forever. It's just purely the content. So you need a team behind you. If you want to go bigger, you need an editor and a constant stream of content, either via your own writers or with someone like niche website builders. And that's probably the final part to your question, which I know is a big answer, but it's a big, big issue, is, it's twofold. You need to get that team happening with you if you really want to free up and own this portfolio of websites. But that's a journey in itself, as you know. Like, you know, we tell people, look, get on the Upwork. That's where we still to this day, it used to be called Odesk, but we get our best outsourcers on Upwork.
What kind of prices are you typically paying for writers on Upwork?
Anywhere from, there's a massive variation. It's interesting. Yeah. Our students do better than us. I mean, yesterday I just did a coaching call with one of our students, and they said, they found a really cool, that was actually a techie. And the students I've got are awesome. They're building amazing websites and they're really good at SEO. And I said, out of interest, how much are you paying for that? I ask every single student, what are you paying for your writers and your techies? Just on the techie note, typically, like these guys, they said to me, they're paying $8 an hour from the Philippines. And that's someone that knows SEO and can build really good websites. It's got web dev experience as well. And but in terms of writers across our community, we are typically, it's anywhere from $20 to $50 US.
Yeah.
That's typically per article. Now it can go way beyond that.
That's
once we've got students with some like medical sites, financial sites, where it gets more niche. And for Liz and myself too, we sometimes need far more expensive articles. We're happy to pay $100, $200 for a really good article, because it's an asset and it generates. You've got to remember, if you get a good article written, we've had articles written that have generated traffic and revenue for, you know, 5 to 10 years. So $200 is not a lot of money compared to, we've done a lot of paid traffic in the past. I can tell you the minute you turn off paid traffic, it's just gone. Whereas investing in quality content is worth it. So I know some people listening here starting out thinking, man, I'm not spending $100 or $200 on content. It's worth it down the track when you've got a good website. But typically across our community of beginners, when they jump on the Upwork and they hire someone, it used to be $10 an article, but those days are gone. I'd say it's $20. $20 to $30 is the normal price for beginner, you know, fairly good articles. And these are good articles. They're pretty good. But nice. I think you do get what you pay for, though, in this day and age.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned about your private buying of websites as well. Obviously, you mentioned Flipper, and there's obviously marketplaces people can go to. Are you still trying to buy sites privately or reaching out to websites? How are you doing that?
Email. And then Zoom calls.
Are you just reaching out to any old website you find on Google, or are you searching for some criteria?
Not so much now. That was our main strategy, and we teach that. We've got some students who have just absolutely blitzed it doing that strategy because they hear that's how Liz and I in the early days really, because that's our forte, like that's what we did with bricks and mortar business. That's why I was so successful there. I still think nothing beats it. Now it's needle in a haystack kind of stuff. It takes time. So if we're going to do it, you can outsource it, but it's just a standard email that we send to people. But also because of who Liz and I, we're very well networked. So people tend to come to us now, which is great. So, but I'm just thinking of the listeners here today, I'll share a couple of really cool stories that we've just had even in our community. So with our community recently, we've been saying, because of the way things are online with ChatGPT and AI written content, one of my key big tips, and we said this in January at the beginning of the year, key big tip is to go back to the old fashioned strategy of, like, the brokers are great. We love all the brokers, of course, like Flipper, Empire Flippers, and FE International and Quiet Light. We know all those guys, known them for the last decade. And, you know, they're a brilliant place to buy really good websites. But I think if you're serious about buying websites, you should also have a secondary strategy, which is this, what I call the private approach, because it works. If you're serious about it, and I'm telling you, with what's happening out there, I think that's where you're going to get some of the best website buyers, because no one else is bidding on them. No one else is approaching them. And what we're after, talking about content, is real content. So we target passion niches. So people interested, like, you know, sport related, hobby sites, gardening, dog training, anything like that, where it's kind of built by, let's call it Mar and Pars. Passion built site, so it, like food blogs and stuff. So it's real content. They've worked at it for many years, ideally. And then because they don't know what they're doing, they haven't done a course like ours, they don't know how to monetize it, or they don't make that much money, or they're sick of it, or they've been hit with a Google update. That normally knocks people out, and then they just abandon them. So what we do is, the strategy is, you don't go to page one of Google, you go to page five or page 10. You literally work backwards, like go way down the rankings, and you just start approaching people. And that's how we've always done it. That's been one of our key strategies. I think that's going to be even more valuable in this day and age, because, give you a really cool example, two of our really well-known students, Nathan and Alexa, they bought a gardening. So now, keep in mind, talking about going into a niche, they're already they're not gardeners. They live in an apartment in Sydney, right? And oh, actually, they live the laptop lifestyle. They travel around the world. They spend 3 months in a different country around the world during COVID. They were in Europe and all that sort of thing. So they're not gardeners at all. They're digital nomads. But they've found that they're really successful in the gardening niche. So they've already got a really successful, quite a big gardening blog that they bought on Flipper. But that I kept telling them, you should do what Liz and I do. And so because they're already, you know, it's killing two birds with one stone. They're already doing SEO. They got to know all the other, they could see all these other sites. And they just approached this guy here in Australia, just this long established Aussie gardening site that had been totally neglected. And they got it for $400. And that thing now is making $4,000 a month. It's 80,000 visitors a month coming into that site. So, yeah, this was a nothing site that it, but because it had the base, it was 10 years old or something. Yeah. And this is just, you know, recent. And then just we've had two other clients just in our immediate private coaching client just in the last month, because I'm really telling everyone you should be out there doing it. The biggest success we've seen is in the travel niche. They're buying up, you know, how people were traveling around the world during COVID and stuff, and now they've neglected them. Mm. We've got a student just emailed me and said, hey, Matt, followed your strategy, bought a long established, like 10-year established travel blog. There's over, she bought it for $1,000 and it's got 500 genuine articles on it. They're just the content alone.
And what kind of traffic was it getting?
It had decent traffic. It's in the thousands. It's not massive, but it's more for the content, because she already knows what she's doing in that niche. She can either take that content and stick it on, because the big corporates are doing this now. It's really interesting. The big buyers are actually quietly doing this as well. They're buying up websites for the content alone, because it's got a bit of age to it and it's genuine. And we've got another lady in our community. I love this one, Annette. She's a grey nomad traveling around Australia in a caravan, and just on one of the Facebook forums in the grey nomad space, someone said, "Oh, I've been doing this for a long time, but I'm retiring. Like I'm going to stop traveling around Australia now. Does anyone want my website?" $5,000 later, no one else even knew what it was worth. This is a 14-year-old website, and that website now is making $4,000 a month. And she bought it for $5,000. That's a travel site around Australia. And it had 14 years worth of history on it for $5,000. I mean, at that level, you don't even have to do due diligence. It's just, that's a no-brainer. You know, and she just integrated it straight away onto her other travel blog, which she was using as she travels around, because she knew how much money she was making. So there's a ton of these examples. You find them in the passion niches, though. It's a really cool strategy. It works really well. And you're getting the content and genuine content, but you're also getting the domain age and authority. So that's kind of my hot tip for buying websites for this year and beyond. I reckon that's going to be a hugely powerful strategy over the next 5 years.
Yeah, the sites I've bought have all been private. The general fitness one was, that was a very famous fitness blog from starting like 2011, and I've been following it. I think most people have been following it back then, and then literally in 2021 he just posted on Instagram that he's either going to shut it down or sell it if someone wants it. And I just like reached out to him. I ended up buying it for a day. I mean, it has branded search traffic, and that thing had like no SEO, nothing, and it was making $200 to $400 a month with like zero SEO, no email list, nothing. And I was like, fuck, okay, sweet. That was like the perfect. Then the other strategy I did last year, I'm doing the same thing. I'm building like an empire within combat sports. Good. And I search best, whatever it is. And then I put like 2020 or 2019. And then I find the sites that haven't updated the things. And I ended up buying a site that was only doing like $20-$30 a month. But it was like had traffic. It was written by someone in the space. And perfect. So I already had some of the links on it and things like that. So it's like, sweet. So now I'm just like front loading it with content as well. So it's like, it's such an easier way than, you know, trawling through Flipper or whatever it is and maybe finding something good, but where you can negotiate straight with the buyer just through an email or something. Like,
And you don't always, like you just said, James, you don't always get, it made me just think of something. Don't be thinking you're always going to get bargains like Nathan and Alexa did with their $400 gardening site. It doesn't always work out that way. It's not about the bargain price. It's about getting real legit sites like what you said, you know, that are making 200, 400 bucks a month. That's an awesome base, particularly if you're starting out. But I'd say even if you're quite advanced, that's what all of us are doing. The big corporates now, like these aggregators and stuff, they're looking for exactly the same thing, but obviously just at a much bigger level. So, but in passion niches, it works really well, really, really well. Mm. Yeah, and in the sports niche, like what you're in, you could build an awesome little mini empire there that then is an easy sale down the track, as you know. That's an easy sale because it's just a legit, like the key is what you said too, it's written by someone who's actually, like it feeds into the EAT formula, right, for Google. It's written by someone who actually has experience and expertise in the niche. And that's what Google's looking for, and the algorithm is good at sorting that out. So if you buy these real ones, we've got clients that have bought food blogs in exactly the same way. It's really cool. Here's a cool story. I was teaching this live, right, in front of hundreds of people on a private event that we ran. And I said, all right, let's just do a quick Google search and I'll show you what I mean. Someone sing out a niche, and they said a food niche. It's like a vegetarian thing. And literally, as luck would have it, purely unscripted, literally on page two, I found within less than 5 minutes a neglected food blog that was ranking pretty highly for a really cool, it was vegetarian, something to do with, well, maybe it's to do with paleo. Anyway, all of a sudden, there's like heaps of us are seeing exactly the site I'm talking about. The lady hadn't updated the website in like years, but it was still ranking. And that's even better than finding one on page five or six or whatever. And it was a real shock, even to me. I'm like, oh man, okay, that's what we used to find in the good old days. That's pretty rare when you see that. So a couple of the people approached her to see if she would sell, but she didn't want to sell it, unfortunately. But it had just been, it's just weird that it had, you know, this old neglected site was still ranking, not on quite on page one, but on page two, for a really good keyword, and as we know, a super hot niche like paleo. So when you find that sort of gold, and she had no monetization on the website whatsoever. I think all she did except was paid guest posts, and that was it. So you imagine someone that's already in that niche, already making really good money, like some of our clients are, you know, if they're making $5,000 or $6,000 a month already in that niche, and they see that thing, that's a no-brainer. You just buy it, whatever the price is, because you know you can instantly monetize it yourself and make, you know, way more than like long term. And I think that's a really smart key strategy these days. This is a beautiful thing. Once you know what you're doing here, like you, James, in particularly if you can specialize in a certain niche like yourself, same sports niche, you just keep chipping along doing that. Even if you just bought one website a year for the next couple of years and you keep adding them into your portfolio, whether you keep them separate or you combine them or whatever, at the end of it, some media company or some other big buyer is going to look at you and go, oh, James has created something here that, you know, let's just send him a couple of mil or 10 mil or whatever. We want that site and we're going to roll it into our private equity fund or whatever. That's the big play here, I guess. I think that's going to happen a lot more too, in my opinion.
Are you having your students diversify outside of content within their, I guess, online businesses, like going into video and YouTube and socials and things?
That's a really good question. The answer is yes and no. Because we teach, you got to remember, we teach beginners and we just want to get that fundamental knowledge to so that they understand SEO and how content sites work. But yes, interestingly, I'm finding more and more we're starting to suggest to, once they get to intermediate level, yes, they need to move into YouTube and a bit of social and stuff. So in the past, I've got to admit, I'm not a fan of social media. We never used it on our affiliate sites and we don't use it too much these days, but I'm warming very, very rapidly towards YouTube. It's kind of like the secondary SEO. So yes, that's a watch this space. We probably will teach that a lot more over the next 5 years. And I think one of the other reasons why is because that again feeds into, if you're listening to this, I'm presuming you've heard of this EAT do we call it a formula, you know, SEO factor that Google looks at. And what I'm finding, I'm saying to our successful students who've got good affiliate sites up and running, you know, once they hit making $1,000 a month plus, or especially once they're up into the, what, $3,000 a month to $10,000 a month range, I'm saying, all right, now you know what you're doing, you've got your team on board, I think it's now time that if you want to go next level, I think you need to, for eat, to strengthen the EAT signals, bring in YouTube and possibly a Facebook page or something like that. And definitely, we've always taught you should be building a list. Absolutely. Because that's that's huge. That's what the big corporates want to buy. They want that stickiness. They want that recurring revenues or proof of recurring revenues. And just having a content site by itself, it's very exciting when you're a beginner. It's awesome. You know, money turns up in your bank account while you sleep 24/7. It's awesome. But going, if you're thinking big, you should be building a list and building some sort of a following online if you want to go big with this. Yep.
Are you having most students build, I guess, the sites around themselves, like a personal brand? Or are some of them?
No.
Okay. Interesting.
Generally around pseudonyms. So I'll go back to, say, Nathan and Alexa with that gardening site. We've had heaps of fun just creating the personas on there. And Nathan's used his first name. And then, but it's all, they're all personas. And he said, it's really cute. Nice. Now that this thing's, here's a really cool story. Now that it's getting really successful, they're getting approached by industry, like corporate, saying, can we advertise or can you come? And they most recently got an official email from a big gardening show here in Australia saying, can you come and speak at our event? We want your, let's call it Bob Smith. Yeah. Can he speak at our event? And Nathan had to email him. He said, Matt, what do I do? Do I tell them Bob Smith's not real? Or I just said, no. Just say, like, once you meet them face to face, you can make a joke about it. But I'd just say, oh, Bob Smith's not available at the moment. Sorry, he's traveling around Europe, but I can fill in for Bob. But everyone thought it was hilarious. This big gardening show, they love the content that Bob Smith is writing so much. They want him to speak at their event. So Nathan's had to go and kind of, neither of us had seen that before. Just cute problem, nice problem to have when they think your pseudonym's real. That's how good he's, you know, they're doing the pseudonym thing. But pseudonyms are fine. Google's actually fine with pseudonyms. That's not a problem. We've been using pseudonyms for, like, since the day we got online. We've never used our real name anywhere except on eBusiness Institute. We used to joke in our community, Matt was known as a female because online. Most of my pseudonyms are female because we tend to go into work at home mum style, like into passion niches where, because of, like, Liz and I got kids and everything. So everyone always jokes, you know, they know some of the sites I've owned. I'm known as, you know, a female online, whatever, you know, it's quite amusing. So we've always used pseudonyms, but it's interesting. That's a good question, though. I know if you're more advanced in SEO, all things being equal, if you can use your real name online, at least have one website in your portfolio where you do use your real name online. It is a lot easier because when you get on the press releases and you start doing YouTube stuff, got to admit, it's easier for Google to connect up the EAT score. So that is a slight balancing act with content sites these days. That's another thing that's changed. I've found now we do have to think a lot smarter about helping our clients create these online pseudonyms as well. And that's something that if you're intermediate, you do need to think that one through, particularly if you're going to own a portfolio of websites like we do. You need to think how, because obviously with a pseudonym, it's a little bit tricky to have a LinkedIn profile and stuff because they know it's not real these days. So that bit, that's where we lose on our affiliate sites versus the affiliate sites with LinkedIn profiles and stuff like that. But in the passion niches, it's not quite as important. That's a really smart question. That's the other thing that's probably changed a little bit over the years. But pseudonyms still work fine. Like I said, gardening site and stuff, you know. Even the industry bodies think they're real, so that's not a problem. You get out and guest post as your pseudonym too. That we teach that as well. As long as you're guest posting as your pseudonym, it's not a problem.
Yeah. Then at least you're sending those signals back with the name and things. And my main sites have me on it, but my other sites don't, because sometimes I might want to promote something that I wouldn't promote under my name.
And we're for the big commissions. And,
Yeah.
Well, the other thing you can do, James, is obviously too, and this is a new thing too. When you know when you're saying, okay, how do you leverage all this as people transition? What we're doing is when you get more intermediate, start hiring writers who are experts in the niche. It's way easier now than it was 10 years ago. And you just use their expertise, authority. You link back to their LinkedIn profile. They love it. They want the PR. And we've got people in sports niche and they've just literally gone onto Facebook groups and found athletes, professional ex. Normally you go for ex-professional athletes and they're more than happy to write articles or do interviews and they use their real name. There's your instant expertise, authoritativeness and trustworthiness and experience. And you can do it like in food blogs, heaps of chefs, even you'd be surprised, even famous chefs, they're more than happy to do at least an interview or you can find them on Upwork, you know, real med students or whatever who will link back to their LinkedIn profile. That's the other way that you do it. Obviously, you're going to pay a little bit more for that content off an actual expert in the industry, but it's actually pretty easy. That they're always happy to link back to their LinkedIn profile. So that but once you get the site up and running, I'd recommend you do it. You start to seriously think about that, hiring experts from within that niche.
Nice. And I guess the other thing is, with these, I guess, a portfolio of sites, when do you look to sell versus hold for cash flow? Is there something that happens within the life cycle of the site where, okay, this thing needs to exit now, or are you just holding it just to keep the cash flow going?
My first thought when you said that was, man, have I made some mistakes there over the years? I've sold way too early. That's and I think you'd speak to any successful person in business or real estate, and we've got all our friends who are really successful all say the same thing: sold way too early my best assets, because you get what seems to be a really attractive offer, and so you take it at the time, especially when you're a young entrepreneur or you're starting out. You think, man, you know, getting offered 500K for that website, I'm going to take that. That's good. And then you realize years later, I don't know why they paid 500K. I should have stuck with it. So it's normally down to – so my first thought is I'm a really good advisor in this space, but full disclosure, I've made plenty of mistakes selling. I've sold some websites at the beginning of COVID that I am kicking myself now. That was really dumb. I had really good 6- and 7-figure websites that one or two in particular would easily be worth 7 figures now if I'd just kept with it. But I got a really good offer that I thought at the time, I'm going to take it. No one knew what was going to happen in the world. And so we sold out. So you can make mistakes like that and still be okay. The good thing with this is, I guess, once you've got the knowledge, you can always replicate it. Like you can just go back out and build it up again. But in terms of when should you sell a website, the real answer to that is it depends what sort of an entrepreneur you are. What we found over the years, so you got to remember we're involved in mergers and acquisitions, right? With bricks and mortar, but we were typically selling businesses from young guys like yourself who are go-getter entrepreneurs to older guys in their 60s plus who are very high net worth or running private equity firms in Sydney, right? And what I noticed, and it's exactly the same online, the entrepreneurs, the buyers and sellers, let's just talk about sellers. The sellers of businesses typically fall into, to help you answer this question, if you're listening, should I sell? Just based on my experience, what we would see is it's either the sellers who are kind of nearing retirement age and they want to cash out. So they either partially sell a very successful business, and you can do exactly the same thing with a website. You can partially sell a website and stay on board, and that's a really, really smart exit. And then you can have them grow it from there with their extra funding. Or if we were selling a business typically from someone like yourself, James, a young entrepreneur, nearly always what we found with you guys, young entrepreneurs, is you guys are happy to take a business to a certain level and then you get bored, so you sell it and then you rinse and repeat. And that's how you become incredibly wealthy, by the way. Like that's a really smart strategy. And so the answer to your question is you've got to ask yourself, what sort of an entrepreneur are you? Is this exciting? Do you want to just hit the... So for our clients now with websites, it's exactly the same thing. We've got young entrepreneurs who buy websites for, you know, under $10,000 and build them up into assets that are worth 6 figures, and then they sell them, and then they just keep doing that. Pretty cool way to live your life, right? Hmm. But then when you get older, your priorities change a bit, and you get a bit wiser, perhaps with investments, and you realize, the power of compounding, like Warren Buffett tells us all. If I stick to this website, I'm probably going. It's an asset that just keeps paying me 24/7, month in, month out. Times that by 5 years or 10 years, that's a lot of money in the bank. You know, profit. You know, once it's amortized, it's all profit. So, you know, your goal might be, we're finding now people are setting their goals. Everyone has the $1 million sellout goal. So go for that. It might be you just sell your first site for $1 million and then you'll typically roll that into a new deal because you're going to get bored sitting around at home doing nothing. And then you just rinse and repeat and the deal just gets bigger and bigger. So what we see is it just depends. And obviously there's the simple thing too. You might just quickly need some cash flows. You might as well just sell the site. That's fine. But that's kind of not a strategy in itself as such. It's more, when do you sell a good business asset? My advice, if you're patient, is don't do what I've done and we see all our clients do, is if you're sitting on a really good website asset, sit on it and run it for 10 years. That's where we're seeing the eight-figure deals happen now, which is a real surprise to me when I get around and speak to all the brokers. And we've all kind of known each other for the last decade, you know, seen each other doing. And when I ask them that same question, what's the difference between these eight-figure and seven-figure deals? Because that's a big number difference, right? That's a lot of money in the bank. And normally they say, Matt, honestly, it's just time. These guys have stuck at this food blog for, you know, 10 years rather than flipping it. So I know as a young entrepreneur, that's hard to hear. You want the $1 million now or the 500K now or the 100 grand now, whatever the number is, that's going to make a big difference in your life. If you need it for your family, go for it. Sell it. But if you can keep the asset and you know it's a good asset, the biggest mistake we see is, I'm guilty of this as well, we all get bored with our own businesses, particularly our good ones, because they, by their very nature, they're pretty boring. Once they're working, there's not a lot to do on them, relatively wise. And so your brain has this weird cognitive bias towards excitement and drama. So you'll typically work, you know, put your focus on the more crappier sites that need work. And you know, your best asset that's just ticked along for years, making you, I don't know, 10 grand a month or whatever, you think, oh, cool, I'll sell that for, you know, whatever, a really top price, when some corporate comes along and says, oh, we want all that traffic. And you think, oh man, that's a lot of money. But you don't do the numbers of the compounding of it. It could be worth a lot more money to your long term. So think very carefully before you sell it. And as much as we love brokers, and I'm an ex-mergers and acquisitions advisor myself, they obviously want to sell your website, all right? Because
they get a nice business commission.
You're probably sitting on a really good asset. Think carefully before you do what your goals are. It all comes back to your life goals. If you're ready, if you need the cash flow, sure, sell it. But think twice if you're sitting on a good asset, and especially if you know you can build it up into something big. It's a tricky question, that one. You need to speak to people that you trust, including brokers. By the way, what I've seen in this industry, I'm really impressed with all the brokers that we've gotten to know. They're good people. And it's really, really important in that instance. Here's my number one bit of advice, having been on both sides of the fence, right? You need accurate advice as to what your website's actually worth. That's where everything starts. So even if you're vaguely thinking of selling your website, make sure you go and talk to one of the top brokers and get a valuation off it. Don't talk to us. I'm not the ones, we don't sell, we're not acting as brokers these days. Go out there and talk to an actual broker that specializes in selling the sort of website that you own, and tell them your thoughts. Just say, look, should I sell this now or should I sell it in 2 to 3 years? What's the plan here? Get an accurate valuation. It's the number one bit of advice, because that then helps you plan out the journey of your website and your life. This should all relate back to your life's goal and your life's vision. That's typically the advice we give to all the high net worths that we've helped exit their businesses over the years. It's exactly the same with websites. Tell me what your goals are first, then we get an accurate valuation. Does it fit now, or do we need to work to a 2-year plan or something?
That's good advice. Yeah, that's very good advice. I wanted to know as well, because obviously you're teaching a lot of beginners with their sites, with the increase or now the prevalence of AI and AI content, AI apps, all sorts of stuff. Is this going to, or has it started to change what you're teaching? Are you thinking about potentially changing what you're teaching because of this AI?
Yep. Awesome question, James. Man, you asked the smartest questions. It is literally my favorite topic at the moment. My favorite topic for many years has been SEO and how to renovate websites and stuff. But this AI thing, I've got to admit, when it first came out last year, I said to everyone, look, you know, I've tested all those tools, Jasper and all that sort of stuff, awesome. But I've seen all this sort of, in the good old days when we first started, basically it was article spinners, right? And that was a colossal failure in Google's eyes. So I actually said to people, this is how quickly things change. I said, let the dust settle here. Let's just sit back and be very careful, because I'm concerned that if you put AI-generated content on your website, Google's definitely going to figure it out. And I'm always a long-term thinker, as you just heard from my previous answer. I'm always thinking, for our clients' sake, you need to be thinking 5 years out, because this is where you start to make the big money when you let things compound. And I always said to them, okay, as of today, Google can't detect this stuff, but I'm telling you now, in 5 years' time, they're going to, and that's when you said your brilliant website gets slammed, you've got a problem on your hands. But look how much this AI thing has now, you know, even Google's changed their mind completely. They said exactly the same thing. Remember, 6 months ago or 12 months ago, they were saying, do not use AI-generated content. Now they've come out and said, it's perfectly fine as long as it's helpful. And so I've now let the dust settle in my mind, and we are now starting to speak to our clients about AI-generated content. And I don't think it's quite there yet, but my bet is that it's going to be, I mean, everyone's saying it's already revolutionary. It's not there just yet, but I think in the next 6 months, yes, it'll be that quick. Definitely in the next 12 months, I think it's going to change things for the better in this industry, especially for beginners getting onto this. And it will come down to your smarts of how well you drive the content and how well you understand SEO and give. Google's been very, very clear for once on what they want on these websites. And if you stick to like these passion sites and stuff, I think you're going to be. That's why I'm even more passionate about people buying passion sites, because it's real. That's what Google wants. It doesn't matter if it's AI written, but it's got to be helpful. That's what Google wants. So I'm personally very excited about AI. I realize it can bring challenges to content websites, because it can be just the same as everyone else out there. But that's where the smart people are going to make the really big money and really clean up. We don't want to be creating generic sites out there. And I think that's where a service like Niche Website Builders can be really beneficial, because you guys are in the game generating this content. Content is so important, you know. So going forward, you want your finger on the pulse as to what's happening with AI-generated content. I think, too, the value of AI-generated content, really, when you think about it, nothing's actually changed. It's just that instead of having an axe, it's like we come from the outdoor power equipment industry, right? So, and we always talk about chainsaw review sites. So I'll use that analogy. You know, in the past, we go on Upwork, we hire writers, expert writers. It's like using an axe to create content. Now we've got a chainsaw. We can do in literally 5 minutes what used to take us days or sometimes weeks to get content back and all that sort of stuff. So we just got this chainsaw. So what it means is we can just produce content quicker, but we've still got to edit it, still got to SEO it. And I know AI can do all that pretty well, but you've still got to also come up with something that's helpful. So I think on balance, it's going to be a positive thing, but obviously there's challenges if you use it in the wrong way, which is you do not want to be using it to just create generic, I'm going to use CRAP out there. You just don't want to be creating Me Too stuff, but use it as a tool that can help you speed up your content creation. You know, content sites are still going to exist. People say, oh, well, I'm not going to go on the content sites. That's not true, because there's a lot more subconscious messages that are coming when you look at websites. You think of your sites, James, you're in the perfect sports niche. People don't want an answer off ChatGPT. They want to come to your site and read off an expert, you know, real stuff about fitness and sports. You know, just I think what the time where we're all going to win here is in the smarts at the front end, basically in the keyword research, what we decide to put on the websites. That's the key money making skill here.
Nice. No, I think that's a good way to end this podcast too. We've come up to an hour. I've still got a bunch of questions. We might have to do a round two at some point.
I reckon so too.
Yeah, there's still so much to cover. But if people want to follow you, Matt, figure out what you're doing, learn more from you, where can they do that?
Yep, just go to, I would highly recommend you go to ebusinessinstitute.com.au, check out our free masterclass. So you can go to eBusiness Institute. There's heaps of links on there to find our free masterclass if you're new to this. And go and look at our, we show you how to do our strategies of buy, renovate, and sell websites. And you can see lots of examples of our students. Or you can look at our YouTube channel, Digital Investors Show. Just Google Digital Investors Show, and that's the easiest way. Or you can follow me on LinkedIn or whatever, but check us out on the YouTube channel as well. So you'll see us on there.
Perfect. And we'll get all those linked up in the description too for anyone listening as well to go visit Matt and his site there. But thanks for coming on, Matt. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, James. That was unreal. Lots of fun. Love sharing that. Very smart questions. It was really cool to chat to you. Can't wait to get you on our podcast.
Yeah, we'll definitely tee that up soon.
Yeah, mate. Thanks for that. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.